This hour, we've been talking about why countries and people choose to go to war. And so far, we've talked about the romance and the glamour of war, and even about some of the potential benefits of war. But sometimes, the rationale for war can be summed up in one word: revenge. That's a major theme in a new novel that's getting a lot of attention. It's called Green on Blue. It's the story of a little boy in Afghanistan whose name is Aziz. His brother has been badly wounded, and Aziz is looking for revenge. Somewhat surprisingly, Green on Blue was not written by an Afghan writer, but by an American who served in the war there. Raymond Tangekar sat down to talk with Elliot Ackerman.
I served in Afghanistan between 2008 and 2011 in special operations. And so in that capacity, I was an advisor to Afghan troops. So I spent all my time fighting there alongside Afghans, you know, with a few Americans interspersed amongst us. You know, my war buddies, in effect, weren't exclusively Americans. They were these Afghan soldiers. And we did all the things, you know, people do when they go to war. You know, we fought alongside one another. We bled together. We mourned friends together. But when I came home, these weren't a bunch of guys that I could keep up with on Facebook or call long distance or even, you know, go get 50-cent beers with at the local VFW. Mm-hmm. You know, they were trapped in Afghanistan's elliptical war. And being so trapped, you know, I knew I was never going to see them again. So for me, you know, I wrote this book wanting to lend voice to my Afghan friends. And if I'm being honest, too, I also wrote this book because I was really reckoning with the loss of those friendships. So I sort of hope that it stands as a testament to the war that we all fought and from their perspective.
Well, the whole story kicks off with this explosion in Aziz's town, and this attack ends up injuring his brother. And it sets Aziz off on a mission to actually avenge his brother's injury. I mean, revenge plays a really important role in this novel. Throughout the book, you refer to it using the Pashto word badal. How true is this to what you saw in Afghanistan?
You know, it's absolutely true. So the concept is one of what's called Pashtun Wali, which literally translates as the way of the Pashtuns. And the place it's most famously probably in, you know, American popular consciousness is the story of, you know, Marcus Luttrell and Lone Survivor. When those SEALs were overrun, most of them killed, Luttrell was actually taken in by an Afghan man. And when the Taliban came to say, hey, give us this American, he refused, and it wasn't because this Afghan was a great supporter of the U.S. cause in Afghanistan. It was because part of Pashtun Wali, the way of the Pashtuns, is this tenet called Melmastia, which means hospitality, which means if somebody comes to you in duress, you have to take them into your home and protect them. So the Pashtun people take this very, very seriously. They like to say, you know, we've been Muslim for 1,400 years, but we've been Pashtun forever. So it's even more fundamental to their identity than Islam is. But for Aziz, you see it in that his brother is terribly disfigured in the opening pages of the books, and he pledges himself to get badal, which is another pillar of Pashtun Wali, which most closely just translates as revenge. And his desire to get not only badal, but also his need to keep his brother in the hospital to tend to his injuries leads him into joining a militia called the Special Lashkar, which operates in a remote border part of Afghanistan. And what you sort of see is Aziz's descent into a war that in many ways is being fought for every single reason but the ending of the war. And that sort of becomes Aziz's story.
Well, was that the story of the war in Afghanistan while you were there? I mean, was badal the driving force behind the war?
You know, we've been fighting in Afghanistan for almost 15 years now. And one has to ask the question of, is this war going on because we haven't been able to, you know, win enough battles? Or is it going on for other reasons? And I think the war can really, war can elevate people. So, you know, I had a commander I worked with who before the war was basically, a sharecropper. And, you know, the war picked up in earnest. He showed a real aptitude, a managerial aptitude, I guess you would say. And he ascended to be the chief of a pretty powerful militia. So for him, you know, the war ending really wasn't in his best interests. You know, the war had elevated him, and if it ends, that gets taken away from him. So when wars get set up in that way, again, you can have people fighting wars for every reason but the ending of them, and the war kind of takes on its own type of economy in terms of the peoples whose careers and interests it's perpetuating.
Would you mind reading a section for us?
Sure. So this is a section where Aziz has he's joined up with the Special Lashkar, which is this militia. And he's speaking with Commander Sabir about incidents that are going around in a village where they're trying to build an outpost, and one of the elders in that village. This is Aziz's voice. He searched my face as he had done the moon a moment before. He drank some more, saying, "Worse than Haji John is this fool at all. He claims to care for his village, but what does he know of such cares? I am responsible for the soldiers here. I care for your broken families. I give you food and a roof, and I give you the chance for Badal." The moon emerged from a cloud, and in its light, Commander Sabir fumbled at the ground by his feet, searching for Omar's can of fish food. "What of our Badal?" I asked. "What of it?" he replied, still groping at his feet. "We are sick of checkpoints," I said. "We want to strike at Ghazan. That is why I came here. That is why we all came here, for Badal." I thought he would grow angry at this, but he said nothing. He found the fish food and opened its lid. The air turned sharp with the smell. He shook the flakes onto the water's surface. They came slowly from the can. Harder and harder he shook, speaking all the while. "We do anything for Badal, because to do nothing is shameful, and shame is feared more than anything. When I killed Hafez and took Badal from my brother, I was very afraid." His voice trailed off. He looked up from the water and held me in his stare. "What will you do after we kill Ghazan?" he asked. "I'll go back to Orgun, care for my brother, and try to find work." My words hovered in the air, weightless with all they presumed. Commander Sabir listened and unscrewed the cap from the fish food, blowing through its sieved holes, clearing it. Flakes rose into the air, floating down, dusting my hair and face. He screwed the cap back on. Omar bobbed on the water's surface, his one slick eye winking at me as he waited for his meal. "There are many in the special Lashkar who've taken Badal," said Commander Sabir. "Ask Isak or Yar whether it undoes the pain that has been. Ask them why they're still here, fighting. The war sustains us. It can be a life."
Thank you. Well, time and time again throughout the novel, this whole concept of Badal is used as a recruiting tool. You see commanders like Sabir, you know, invoking it in order to get young boys to join his militia. Is that something that you witnessed firsthand?
I think it often would sustain people, you know, the idea of revenge, the idea of, you know, a wrong needing to be righted. But I think there are also, you know, much more immediate concerns. I mean, things, you know, quite frankly, as simple as drawing a paycheck. You know, one of the things that really struck me in Afghanistan, you know, as opposed to I fought in Iraq as well, you know, and in Iraq, there was sort of this sense that, you know, the war has come here, we're at war, but war is not the usual condition for us, that the war will end and we will go back to our lives as they usually are. In Afghanistan, that really didn't exist. War was business as usual, and that makes sense. I mean, you know, the Soviets invaded in 1979, and something that also always struck me was, you know, the average life expectancy of a male living in the provinces of Afghanistan is just under 60 years old. So the war's been going on for now 36 years, so that's 1979. So the men who are dying off in Afghanistan right now were in their early 20s when the Soviets invaded. So in about another 10 years, you're not going to have really anyone left in Afghanistan who can remember that country at peace. So what happens when nobody can remember that country at peace? How do you get to peace? And it stops becoming an act of memory or a returning to normalcy. Peace sort of has to become this sheer act of imagination. You have to imagine it out of whole cloth. And I think that has a profound effect on a society.
For you as a novelist, is war your what inspires you? Is it your muse?
When Faulkner accepted the Nobel Prize, he made this great point, which is he said, you know, the only thing worth writing about is the human heart in conflict with itself. And I think that, you know, war is a place where you can, you know, you really see that laid bare. You know, thou shalt not kill is pretty fundamental to being a civilized human being. And this is the one endeavor where there is sanctioned killing, sanctioning your heart to be, your civilized heart to be in conflict with its savage heart. I don't like to say that you never escape war because it sounds so limiting, but that experience gave me a fundamental understanding of what it means to be a human being. And I'm always writing about the human experience, and my understanding of the human experience is informed by war.
Elliot Ackerman's novel is called Green on Blue. He served 5 tours of duty in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he's the recipient of the Silver Star, the Bronze Star, and the Purple Heart. Raymond Dungacar talked with him.